I'm Larry O'Connor alongside Brian Wilson.
And joining us on the line right now, Katie McFarland, Fox News national security analyst. You can follow her on Twitter at Katie McFarland, and you should, because you learn stuff. Katie, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so we want to stop just a moment and pay tribute to and remember the life of Shimon Peres, the former president, former prime minister of Israel on, I think, three different occasions. Talk about his life and his legacy there, because he was such an important figure on the world stage.
Well, he was really the life of Israel. I mean, his lifespan was the span of the creation of the state of Israel and what Israel became. So Israel is, what, 65 years old? Shimon Peres is in his 90s. He was a young man when Israel earned its statehood, and he saw Israel through all the steps of nation building, creation of a paradise out of the desert. He saw Israel through the various wars, through the 1967 war, through the 1973 Yom Kippur war, and then he was in many government positions, was a participant in the Middle East peace process, ultimately in the Oslo Peace Accord. So I think he, in my mind, is not just a great leader for Israel, but a great leader in the Middle East, but a great world leader. And it shows that someone who sort of has principles and integrity and determination can make an enormous difference, not just in his time, but in all times.
And you mentioned the Oslo Accords, and that's the agreement that earned him the Nobel Prize.
Yes.
But in retrospect, was Shimon Peres at that time... Was he naive?
You think that there could be peace?
Yeah, when he stood there and shook hands in the Rose Garden with Yasser Arafat, suggesting that this was that there actually could be peace, considering what happened afterwards.
Yeah, you know, a good friend of mine was a young aide to Yasser Arafat at that event during the negotiations, and I've over the years have asked him what went wrong. You know, why did it not stick? Why did it not go on to better times? Why did it devolve into worse times? And he said, well, you know, and this man's an Arab, and he said, I think the problem was that the revolutionary generation, Yasser Arafat, who was a man who had always known fighting against and always was a revolutionary, he just could not take that final step to become a man of peace. Kissinger has said similar things, not about Arafat in particular, but about what happens with a revolutionary generation. And Kissinger said it with regard to Iran and the Ayatollahs, that sometimes when a leader is the one who has fought, physically fought, been in wars for so long, he has an almost impossible task to change his mind to be a man of peace. That's why I think in a lot of ways, you know, the man that we celebrate today for his long and great life was a man who was able to turn from one to the other.
Closer to home, the Congress is expected to, this week, to override. I think it's going to happen in the Senate today, later this week in the House, override the president's veto of the 9/11 bill. Many people say this puts our military people, you know, in the sights of those who would bring lawsuits against them. But the desire is to craft a bill that will allow the victims, the people who lost loved ones on 9/11, to sue the Saudis.
Look, I'm not buying the criticism. I mean, I think that American forces overseas or Americans overseas, whether they're doing business or in you know, military, paramilitary situations, they're already vulnerable to all of those things. So I think I'm just not buying that excuse. And I think that if foreign countries, and we're seeing this again today, maybe even in the elections, where foreign countries try to influence or basically go to war against the United States, but they don't do it as a state. They do it through some arm of their government or somebody closely connected to theirs. I think they have to be held accountable.
Would you agree that the reason that this is even an issue is because the American government has let down these victims of 9/11 by not waging this as the act of war that it was, September 11th, and not getting all of the facts out? I mean, these victims, these families, they have no other recourse at this
point. Well, and also because the 9/11 Commission report, which I think was brilliant and has stood the test of time, not all of the elements of it, not all the pages of it were released to the public. Look, I think that the problem we now have with radical Islam, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS or al-Nusra Front, you know, pick your garden variety, a bad guy, this is a global war. Not because we've made it a global war, but because they've made it a global war. And whether it's with the Israeli Palestinians or with the Islamic terrorists and the rest of the world, you need two to make peace. You only need one to make war. And they have declared of global war against Western civilization. And if we pretend we ignore it, we pretend it doesn't exist, we won't call it up for what it is at our peril. Because I look at it and say, this is like World War II. This is like the Cold War. We need to use all the elements of national power. We need to have an ideological element of this, a military element, an economic element. We need to work with our allies in the region. We need to find some allies in the region and then work with those allies in the region. And for the people who just want to debate how many troops we're going to send to the Middle East to destroy ISIS, wrong question. And the people who say, well, it's just we're no boots on the ground ever, no matter whatever, wrong answer. And I think that we have, from the very beginning, not fought this war as we should have fought this war.
This week we had the debate, and a lot of national security issues came up, ISIS, cybersecurity. Your thoughts?
About the debate? Or
yeah,
about
and how it went and who won those issues?
Well, okay, but I mean, here's the thing. I've heard Donald Trump in his terrorism speech give the kind of answer I wanted to hear at that debate, which was, we're treating this as a global war, and we are going to have ideological, you know, diplomatic, blah, 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 components of it. He never got there, and I think that was a lost opportunity on his part. Secretary Clinton never really got there anyway. They both said, I got a plan. No, I got a plan. You got a better plan. I don't have any plan. And nobody talked about what their plan was. And for Secretary Clinton's plan, I don't think it's big enough. I don't think that she, in her plan, which is on her website, as Donald Trump pointed out, I don't think her plan takes in all of those elements that I'm talking about, having an ideological component. You know, forget the PC stuff and start calling it what it is.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. KT McFarland, it is always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.